Welcome to Authors on Tour Live, a weekly podcast for people who love to hear about books from the authors themselves. Presented by Belco Credit Union. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. My name is Darren Fode, and this Best of Authors on Tour podcast was recorded live at the Tattered Cover Bookstore, one of the premier independent bookstores in the nation, with three locations in the Metro Denver area. You can visit www.authorsontourlive.com for a complete list of upcoming podcasts. Wait a minute, it's time to begin.
This is a dog who never in a million years should have ever, ever been seen in public, let alone end up in a feature-length movie. But truth indeed can be much stranger than fiction, and so it happened that when Marley was just a few years old, he ended up in a feature-length movie. We're living in South Florida where a lot of movies are filmed, and through this weird series of events and connections, there was a friend of a friend of a friend who was hired as a production assistant for this New York film crew that was in Lake Worth, Florida, which is just south of West Palm Beach, filming a feature-length movie. This is sort of like baseball fantasy. And they needed a family dog to just be in the background. He didn't have to do anything. He didn't have to perform tricks. It was like there was no demand. They just needed a dog to be sort of sitting in the background. And she said, well, I know some people who have a Labrador Retriever. And so Marley got to audition for the movie, and he actually got the part despite the highlight of his audition was he jumped out of the car, jumped up, grabbed the director's checkbook, and took off across the parking lot with it. And true story. And despite that, he got the part. And you can imagine how it went. I'm going to read you a section from the book that describes Marley's film debut, his first day on the movie set of a movie called The Last Home Run. On the morning shooting was to begin, I walked out of the bedroom to find Jenny and Marley tangled together as if locked in mortal combat, bouncing across the floor. She was straddling him with her knees tightly hugging his ribs and one hand grasping the end of his choker chain as he bucked and lurched. It was like having a rodeo right there in my living room. What in God's name are you doing? I asked. What's it look like? She shot back. Brushing his teeth. Sure enough, she had a toothbrush in the other hand and was doing her best to scrub his big white ivories as Marley, frothing prodigiously at the mouth, did his best to eat the toothbrush. He looked positively rabid. Are you using toothpaste? I asked, which of course begged the bigger question. And how exactly do you propose getting him to spit it out? Baking soda, she answered. Thank goodness, I said, so it's not rabies. An hour later, we left for the Gulfstream Hotel, the boys in their car seats and Marley between them, panning away with uncharacteristically fresh, minty breath. Our instructions were to arrive by 9 a.m., but a block away, traffic came to a standstill. Up ahead, the road was barricaded, and a police officer was diverting traffic away from the hotel. The filming had been covered at length in the newspapers, the biggest event to hit sleepy Lake Worth, Florida, since Body Heat was filmed there 15 years earlier. And a crowd of spectators had turned out to gawk. The police were keeping everyone away. We inched forward in traffic, and when we finally got up to the officer, I leaned out the window and said, "We need to get through." "No one gets through," he said. "Keep moving. Let's go." "We're with the cast," I said. He eyed us skeptically, a couple in a minivan with two toddlers and a family pet in tow. I said, "Move it," he barked. "Our dog is in the film," I said. Suddenly, he looked at me with new respect. "You have the dog?" he asked. The dog was on his checklist. "I have the dog," I said. "Marley the dog," Jenny chimed in, "playing himself." He turned around and blew his whistle with great fanfare. "He's got the dog!" he shouted to a cop a half block down. "Marley the dog!" And that cop in turn yelled to someone else, "He's got the dog!" Marley, the dog's here! Let him through! A third officer shouted from the distance. Let him through! The second cop echoed. The officer moved the barricade and waved us through. Right this way, he said politely. I felt like royalty. As we rolled past him, he said once again, as if he couldn't quite believe it, he's got the dog. In the parking lot outside the hotel, the film crew was ready for action. Cables crisscrossed the pavement. Camera tripods and microphone booms were set up. Lights hung from scaffolding. Trailers held racks of costumes. Two large tables of food and drink were set up in the shade for cast and crew. Important-looking people in sunglasses bustled about. Director Bob Gossie greeted us and gave us a quick rundown of the scene to come. It was simple enough. A minivan pulls to the curb. Marley's make-believe owner is at the wheel. Her daughter, played by a cute teenager named Danielle from the local performing arts school, and son, another local budding actor not older than 9, are in the back seat with their family dog, played by Marley. The daughter opens the sliding door and hops out. Her brother follows with Marley on a leash. They walk off camera. End of scene. Easy enough, I told the director. Okay, people, listen up, Gossie told the crew. The dog's a little nutty, okay? But unless he completely hijacks the scene, we're going to keep rolling. He explained his thinking. Marley was the real thing, a typical family dog, and the goal was to capture him behaving as typical family dogs would behave on a typical family outing. No acting or coaching, pure cinema verite. Just let him do his thing, he coached, and work around him. You see where this is going, don't you? When everyone was set to go, I loaded Marley into the van and handed his nylon leash to the little boy, who looked terrified of him. He's friendly, I told him. He'll just want to lick you. See? I stuck my wrist into Marley's mouth to demonstrate. Take one. The van pulls to the curb. The instant the daughter slides open the side door, a yellow streak shoots out like a giant furball being fired from a cannon and blurs past the cameras trailing a red leash. Cut. I chase Marley down to the parking lot and hauled him back. Okay, folks, we're going to try that again, Gossie said. Then to the boy, he coached gently. The dog's pretty wild. Try to hold on tighter this time. Take two. The van pulls to the curb. The door slides open. The daughter is just beginning to exit when Marley huffs into view and leaps out past her, this time dragging the white-knuckled and white-faced boy behind him. Cut. Take three. The van pulls up. The door slides open. The daughter exits. The boy exits, holding the leash. As he steps away from the van, the leash pulls taut, stretching back inside, but no dog follows. The boy begins to tug, heave, pull. He leans into it and gives it everything he has. Not a budge. Long, painfully empty seconds pass. The boy grimaces and looks back at the camera. Cut. I peered into the van to find Marley bent over, licking himself, where no male was ever meant to lick. He looked up at me as if to say, can't you see I'm busy? Take four. I load Marley into the back of the van with the boy and shut the door. Before Gossie calls action, he breaks for a few minutes to confer with his assistants. Finally, the scene rolls. The van pulls to the curb. The door slides open. The daughter steps out. The boy steps out, but with a bewildered look on his face. He peers directly into the camera and holds up his hand. Dangling from it is half the leash. It's end jagged and wet with saliva. Cut, cut, cut! The boy explained that as he waited in the van, Marley began gnawing on the leash and wouldn't stop. The crew and cast were staring at the severed leash in disbelief, a mix of awe and horror on their faces, as though they had just witnessed some great and mysterious force of nature. I, on the other hand, was not surprised in the least. Marley had sent more leashes and ropes to their graves than I could count. He even managed to chew his way through a rubber-coated steel cable that was advertised as, quote, used in the airline industry. Shortly after Connor was born, Jenny came home with a new product, a doggy travel harness that allowed her to buckle Marley into a car seat belt so he couldn't wander around the moving vehicle. In the first 90 seconds using the new device, he managed to chew through not only the heavy harness itself, but the shoulder strap of our brand new minivan. Okay, everybody, let's take a break, Gossie called out. Turning to me, he asked, in an amazingly calm voice, how quickly can you find a new leash? He didn't have to tell me how much each lost minute cost him, as his union-scale actors and crew sat idle. There's a pet store a half mile from here, I said. I can be back in 15 minutes. And this time, he said, get something he can't chew through. I returned with a heavy chain leash that looked like something a lion trainer might use. And the filming continued, take after fail take. Each scene was worse than the one before. At one point, Danielle, the teenage actress, let out a desperate shriek mid-scene and screamed with true horror in her voice, oh my God, his thing is out. Caught. In another scene, Marley was panning so loudly at Danielle's feet as she spoke on the telephone that the sound engineer flipped off his headphones in disgust and complained loudly, I can't hear a word she's saying. All I hear is heavy breathing. It sounds like we're making a porno flick. Caught. So went day one of shooting. Marley was a disaster, unmitigated and without redemption. Part of me was defensive. Well, what did they expect for free, Benji? Part of me was mortified. I self-consciously stole glances at the cast and crew and could see it plainly in their faces. Where did this animal come from, and how can we send him back? At the end of the day, one of the assistants, clipboard in hand, told us the shooting lineup was still undecided for the next morning. Don't bother coming in tomorrow, he said. We'll call if we need Marley. And to ensure there was no confusion, he repeated, so unless you hear from us, don't show up. Got it? Yeah, I got it. Loud and clear. Gossie had sent his underling to do the dirty work. Marley's fledgling acting career was over. Not that I could blame them. With the possible exception of that scene in The Ten Commandments, where Charlton Heston has to part the Red Sea, Marley had presented the biggest logistical nightmare in the history of cinema. He had caused who knows how many thousands of dollars in needless delays and wasted film. He had slimed countless costumes, raided the snack table, and nearly toppled a $30,000 camera. They were cutting their losses, writing us out. It was the old, don't call us, we'll call you routine. Marley, I said when we got home, your big chance, and once again, you really blew it. Thank you. So, that wasn't the end of Marley's film career. The next morning, to my great surprise, the assistant calls, and he says, the director, Gossie, just looked at the dailies from the previous day, and he thought Marley was hilarious, and he wants him back. Can you have him back in 20 minutes? So against all odds, Marley survived that opening day of filming. And I took him back, and he was there on set for 4 days, four pretty disastrous days. But it was a pretty disastrous movie overall, so it all kind of worked together. I don't need to tell you that the last home run went straight to video. And I sort of lost track of it. I never heard a word about it. And like 2 years later, I walked into Blockbuster. And I said, have you ever heard of a movie called The Last Home Run? And he said, oh yeah, we have it. I said, you have it? And he says, yeah, as a matter of fact, we have every copy in stock. Not a single copy had ever been checked out. So in one of those great ironies of life, this sort of loser movie that never did anything, and that was going on eBay 6 months ago for like $3, is now going on eBay for $90 because Marley and me, I found out the other day, is just entered its 7th week at number 1 on the New York Times bestseller list. Thank you. And so that means there's a lot of people out there reading this book and a lot of people trying to find a copy of The Last Home Run so they can see just how wild this dog was. He's only in the movie for about 90 seconds. That was the usable footage they got of him. But you definitely get a taste of Marley. There's one scene where the teenager's on the phone, and at the end of the hall, you just see the little boy come running across with a leash, and then you see Marley dragging him. It was very funny. And So I wish I would have bought all 7 copies of that movie. I could have helped pay for the college funds for the kids with that.
That's all for this Best of Authors on Tour podcast. I'm Darren Fode, and this podcast was recorded live at the Tattered Cover Bookstore in Denver, Colorado. Authors on Tour Live has been presented by Belco Credit Union. Belco has been serving members' financial needs since 1936. Visit www.belco.org/authors.asp to learn more about how Belco can help you. Stay pod tuned in the coming weeks for many more authors as we podcast Authors on Tour.